ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Thank you, woman, that we have left. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
I'm going to show you that's a penalty.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free stake.
This is Late Hits. Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
This is the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN on the HRP listener line. On the text line, on Twitter, at PCreighton1. Aaron Raybould on the other side of the glass at the Master Controls. At Aaron is Blitz, at ESPN 97.5. On the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. And I feel a little better today. I guess I feel a lot better today. I got my second COVID shot on Tuesday. And yesterday, I just felt exhausted all day. I mean, I went full four-year-old and took a midday nap. I was two Red Bulls in, and I was still just dragging behind the whole day. And, you know, after the show, I said to Aaron, I was like, was it really obvious that I was kind of dragging? He's like, eh, kind of. Feel a little better today. No nap needed, no kindergarten-style nap needed today. I am not two Red Bulls in. In fact, I've only opened my first. Feeling a lot better today. That one day really made a big difference. You know, I was concerned because the first COVID shot that I had, I felt bad for like 3 days. This one, just one day, I was just tired. No, didn't feel sick, didn't have a fever, didn't have like a real bad headache or anything. Just tired for a day. And today, feeling a lot better. Apparently, I was not the only person here in the city of Houston who was not feeling their best after receiving a COVID vaccination. Apparently, Lance McCullers Jr. was also not feeling his best yesterday after receiving the vaccine. And while I got the Pfizer vaccine, so there's two shots, Lance McCullers Jr. got the Johnson & Johnson vaccines. We only had one. And he was feeling pretty awful trying to pitch through the game yesterday. And I understand people like, well, if you don't feel good, you shouldn't pitch. Like, if you know anything about athletes, you know that is not how they're wired. They're going to take the ball until you pry it from their cold, dead hand. But before yesterday's game, the Astros put five players on the COVID list. And they were down 6-0 before rallying, getting the bases loaded in the ninth inning with the tying run on second base before the rally fell apart. And after the game, Lance McCullers Jr., who is also the Astros player representative for the union, he is their player rep, said, I don't really understand why we played tonight, quite honestly. Seems like the rules are different for different teams depending on who it is based on the COVID issues. A lot of questions and things we have to get figured out as a team, and hopefully we do. Dusty Baker said, Lance McCullers was sick as a dog. His legs were wobbly. He couldn't hardly catch his breath. But he went out and he took the ball because his team needed him to. McCullers apparently has been hit very hard by the side effects of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That he'd been pretty ill for the first few days of his vaccine. And while I didn't want to blame it for why he didn't pitch well yesterday, not a real big leap to make to say a guy who is sick as a dog is probably not going to be at his best on the mound. And after the game, he questioned about why did they play the game. You know, he might have a little something there. Because if you remember the very opening series, there was a postponement. The Mets and the Nationals. That series, the entire series, was postponed. As four Nats players wound up testing positive. So, because four players tested positive, they postponed the entire series. Now, while the Astros didn't have four players test positive, they put five guys on the COVID list due to contact tracing and whatnot. And according to John Heyman, it appears they all tested negative. So far, the only player that has tested positive for COVID for the Astros appears to be Pedro Baez, who is still not with the team. But if they could shut down the whole series over four players, why couldn't they give the Astros a one-game respite for five players? Right? The logic behind this is supposed to be, well, you have enough guys on the on your alternate list, so just play with those guys. All right, well, the Nationals could have done that. But they didn't. And baseball was cool with that. You know, and we were supposed to get Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom, opening night, Thursday night, nationally televised game. And instead, we got nothing. In this situation, Astros and Tigers, they could have postponed the last game of the series and made it up as a doubleheader later on in the season. Then you take into effect the fact the Astros have an off day today, and how long it takes to get tests back, they could have postponed tomorrow's game and then made it up as part of a weekend doubleheader. And essentially, you'd have had really no issues. So I understand why Lance McCullers Jr. is unhappy with the way things went down. And the Astros having to play, I understand why he's not happy. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say they've got a second set of rules, but would anybody feel like Major League Baseball might not necessarily go out of their way to do something for the Astros right now? Anybody feel like Major League Baseball league office might be like, it's the Astros. Bleep them. And you're going out to Seattle, and you're going to have a weekend series in Seattle. You tell me you couldn't have one of those games as a doubleheader over the weekend? You look at the series of Seattle coming up Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You could have done a doubleheader on Sunday where you got a day game scheduled, followed by a travel day, so no game on Monday. You could have played a doubleheader, had an off day, and then gone to Colorado. I don't see why that couldn't work. Seemed like that would have been just fine. And then the team essentially would have had 3 days off, but out of that, only one game really would have been postponed, and that would have been the last game with the Tigers they'd have to make up later on in the season because they'd play the doubleheader with Seattle. So that game really wouldn't get pushed out later in the season. It made up on Sunday. Off day Monday, travel to Colorado. All things good. So I understand why he's upset. If you could postpone a series for another team, why couldn't you postpone like one game for the Astros? Instead, the JV squad dropped the game 6-4. The Astros have lost five straight. And you look at the Astros lineup last night. Well, they started Aledmys Diaz, Abraham Toro. They started Ronnie Dawson, Jason Castro. A lot of backups in this game. Now, Dusty had said that those players wouldn't be traveling right away with the team, but considering that, according to John Heyman, all the tests came back clean, nothing says they won't travel a day later. So maybe they only miss one more game. It's just a point of baseball clearly could have handled this better. You know, if we're going to do the abundance of caution thing, then why with one team and not another? We'll get more into the Astros, and Major League Baseball has another one of these agreements with the Atlantic League to test out rules. But this year, the rules are flipping stupid. Next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So, after the Astros opened up 6-1, and, well, they were raking like crazy. Astros were scoring runs in bunches in their first seven games. And they were averaging almost 7.5 runs a game in their first seven starts. But, you know, in the five-game losing streak, they're hitting .237. They're 6-43 with runners in scoring position. And the bats have gone cold. When you score a bunch of runs, life's a lot easier. But, you know, some of the things that we mentioned as things to watch this year with the Astros are still things worth watching. And one of those is the starting rotation. There's a lot of talented pitchers on the Astros, but watching innings limits is something that they're going to have to do all year. And that means they're going to have to lean more on the pen before the season starts. Like, okay, well, you know what? They've got some arms in the pen. They probably lean on it more. This might be the best bullpen they've had in the Jim Crane era. But right now, they're basically getting max 5 innings per start. So far, only 3 times in their first 12 games has a starter gone 6 innings, twice by Zach Greinke. The Astros have 2 quality starts this year, both by Zach Greinke. So, Astros starters have gone 57 innings, and relievers have gone 50 innings. That's not the kind of split you want to maintain. And while, you know, Valdez and the fractured finger certainly hurt, Odorizzi clearly should not have started. He wasn't ready. It seemed like they kind of rushed him through, and they didn't need to. You know, they sent Javier down to stretch him out more because he had missed time due to contact tracing. But Odorizzi missed like 2/3 of spring training. He wasn't signed. So why did you have to send down Javier so you could activate Odorizzi? Odorizzi clearly did not look like he was ready to go. That's a mistake made by the Astros at the management level. And, you know, we said this before the season, the only pitcher on this team capable of going probably 180 innings, let alone 200 innings, is going to be Zach Greinke. Everybody else, they're going to have to watch the number of innings they pitch because none of them have thrown a lot of innings the last few years. A lot of young guys coming back from injuries, guys who just haven't pitched that many innings. If you're familiar with the rule of 50, it's basically, it's data that shows high propensity for diminished performance and extreme high risk of injury in pitchers who throw more than 50 innings over their career high in a given season. So if you've got a guy who's never thrown more than 120 innings, you're usually not letting him go over 170 the next year. When that guy gets up to 190 that next season, then the following year, they tend to not pitch very well, and they also have a tendency to get hurt. Now, Javier went 5 innings in his second start, threw 88 pitches, and got sent down to be stretched out. The Astros went the 4-man rotation. And Odorizzi wasn't really ready to go. That's put a lot of pressure on the pen. Now, Pedro Baez was their biggest offseason acquisition as far as relief pitchers go. He hasn't played yet. He doesn't look like he's close to playing. He is the one guy on the team that was diagnosed with COVID. And in addition to having COVID, apparently he's also got a bum right shoulder. Then Andre Scrubb's got a bum right shoulder. And Anoli Paredes has a soreness in his right side. Josh James and Austin Pruitt had offseason surgery. And a lot of the depth is unavailable right now. Luis Garcia has been good. Brandon Belak has been good. Joe Smith has been terrible. Brooks Raley's been terrible. Blake Taylor has not pitched well. Ryan Stanek has pitched very well, and Ryan Presley's been untouchable. I know it's short sample size, but Ryan Presley can be the closer. He's got wipeout stuff, and really outside of when he's dealt with, you know, injury to his knee, he's been terrific. He's got one of the biggest breaks on his curveball in the entire league. Now, at some point, Baez is going to come back. Paredes and Scrub are going to come back. And, you know, Baez is a proven commodity. Paredes and Scrub pitched well last year for the Astros. They'll get more arms. And I love Ryan Stanek because he takes the mound. He looks like Dave Mustaine from Megadeth. He should really come out to Angry Again from Megadeth every time he comes out. That would be perfect. Just come out to Angry Again. That would be better than when Luke Gregerson used to come out to Volbeat. So, you know, Astro, and the other thing is the hitting. You know, everybody was smoking hot coming out of the gate. Since then, Yordan's 3-for-16. Bregman's 2-for-17. Correa's 3-for-16. Miles Straw hasn't gotten going. Kyle Tucker has struggled. He's hit some homers, but his average, he's still riding the Mendoza line. He's on the interstate. He's not even at the Mendoza line. Kyle Tucker is on the interstate. Well, these are four homers. Yuli's continued to smack, but I know a lot of people were angry. Kyle Tucker made the last out, but again, Yordan, Bregman, Correa, 3-for-16, 3-for-16, 2-for-17. That's the meat of the lineup. If those guys don't hit, going to be a lot more problems than worry about whether or not Kyle Tucker, you know, struck out, the bases loaded. You know, and if we're going to be fair to Kyle Tucker, he started slow last year, and then he hit the hell out of the ball. He's one of the best hitters second month of the season. Tucker's going to hit. Don't worry about Tucker. Whole damn team is cold. Like, oh, that Kyle Tucker, it's his fault. The whole team is cold. You know, I'm really disappointed in the start of the season Straw had. Straw hit really well in spring training and just hasn't found it yet since the season started. And again, look, they've played 12 games. You don't even have enough data points to establish trends yet. It's 12 games. There's 150 more games to go. You know, would I like to see 7 runs a game? Hell yeah, 7 runs a game is fun. You're beating the hell out of teams. You know, in that 6-1 start, the Astros hit 15 homers. That's a club record. So the offense is going to be there long term. If they are going to be serious about being World Series contenders, they're probably going to have to make a couple of moves at the deadline, the biggest being for a starting pitcher. That will not be cheap. But they'll need to make a move for a starter, probably help to make a move for a reliever. But look, the Astros, like I said, when we get to Memorial Day, the Astros aren't going to be 500. You know, they're not going to spend 6 weeks hitting, you know, 143 runners on base. So, definitely not time to be worrying about the Astros, but this is how you've gone from 6-1 to 6-6. They stopped hitting. And you got a few guys in the pen who are just setting everything on fire. Now, we've seen Major League Baseball and the Atlantic League collaborate on testing out various rules. Well, they're going to do it again this year. But this time, instead of, you know, some of these things making sense, all three of the new rules they're going to implement are absolutely idiotic. Next. They wanna get mine.
ago. Real fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
I was talking about my friend Dr. Ben Salento, Texas Sinus and Snoring. You know, for over 20 years, I dealt with massive sinus issues. Terrible sinus pains on the regular basis. I had this sinus drip that when I would sleep on one side, well, the sinus pressure would drain from one side of my head to the other. Then I couldn't breathe. I'd have to wake up, roll over. It started all over again 60 minutes later. Wake up, can't breathe, do it again. Sinus infections like every 2 to 3 months. It led to horrible snoring. My kids just told me the chainsaw. And ultimately to sleep apnea, but I couldn't sleep with the CPAP machine. So I just let it go. I didn't realize how dangerous that was until well after the fact. But a little over a year and a half ago, I met Dr. Ben Salento and went to go see him. He's got a state-of-the-art facility up in North Houston. And we talked. We had a conversation. And we talked. And I said, this is what's going on with me. And he takes the time to listen, not for the purpose of, okay, let me tell you. He wants to get the full picture. And then they start doing the tests and putting a plan together. So after I talked about everything that I dealt with and struggled with, did a CT scan, which they do right there in the office. They do everything in Dr. Ben's office. You never have to go see a different doctor, go to a different location, get another okay from your insurance. You'll never do any of that stuff. It's all handled in Dr. Ben's office. They did a CT scan. They put the results up on the board. Dr. Ben explained to me what he saw. And we put a plan of action together, and roughly a month later, I had a procedure to remove staph infection from my sinus, why it kept coming back. They did a balloon sinuplasty to fix all the damaged tissues in my sinuses from the constant infections. And they did a septoplasty to fix my deviated septum that I didn't even know I had. And since I had the procedure, I breathe markedly better. I mean, it's night and day. I sleep better. I no longer have the sinus drain issue. I no longer snore. I no longer have sleep apnea. I know this because after I had my procedure, Doc had me download an app that listens to you while you sleep. Now when I go to bed, I wake up, I feel great. Not like I used to, I wake up more tired than I was. If you deal with any of these things, sinus issues, snoring, sleep apnea, you need to go schedule a consultation with Dr. Ben Salento. Take down this number. Put it down in the notepad of your phone. 346-413-9313. 346-413-9313. Or go to Texas Sinus and Snoring. Schedule your consultation with Dr. Ben today and tell him I sent you by. You know, there's a lot of late hitters who have gone to see Dr. Ben. Dr. Dre on 290 has gone to see Dr. Ben. Crystal's gone to see Dr. Ben. We had one of the security guards at Texas Card House went to go see Dr. Ben. Everybody feels better after they go see him. Go see him. You got nothing to lose. You got everything to gain. Go see him. So in the past, we've seen Major League Baseball collaborate with the Atlantic League in order to try out various new rule concepts that they want to test out and see what kind of impact it has on the game, etc. And they're going to do that again this year. Now, while we don't have an Atlantic League team here in Texas anymore, as the Skeeters are now the AAA affiliate of the Astros and no longer an Atlantic League team, the league still has an agreement with the Atlantic League, and they're going to try out new rules. And while in the past, I've kind of liked a lot of the different rule changes that they were experimenting with, you know, you could see how it would make a difference in the game for a positive aspect. The rules that they're going to test out this year are absolutely moronic. None of this junk makes any sense. I mean, number one, I don't understand why baseball constantly has to feel like, oh, we've got to change the rules, change the rules, change the rules, change the rules. No, you don't. You need to market your players better, market your game better, be smarter about things. You need to keep changing the damn game. So here are some of the rules they're going to go with. Now remember, the league is experimenting with rules for the purpose of trying to, A, add more action to the game, and B, speed the game up. In case you're wondering, those two things are not congruent in any universe. If there's a lot more action going on in the game, that means there's a lot more scoring, and more scoring means the game takes longer, not less time. But, again, we talked about logic, and there isn't any. So here is one of the rules. They want to change the DH rule that after the starting pitcher is removed from the game, the team would lose their DH. And either your relief pitcher has to hit for themselves or you've got to go to a pinch hitter. So let's think about this logically. You want to have more hitting and more offense, but you're going to remove a hitter for potentially three innings or longer so that a pitcher could make an out, or you put a pinch hitter up there. You put up a lesser bat because that's going to make the game more interesting? It's stupid. It also makes it a lot harder for a team to come back from a deficit because if your starter gets knocked out or, you know, gets injured or whatnot during the game, you will probably lose one of your better hitters. And now you've got to try to come back while not having one of your better hitters in. Isn't that also, you know, kind of antithetical to what you're trying to do? You're removing competitiveness from the game. Now, the idea is to make a team stay with their starter longer. Well, when teams have a DH, they already tend to stay with their starter longer. Because they don't have to worry about yanking them for a pinch hitter in a 1-0 game in the fifth inning or the sixth inning when sometimes teams are, okay, we got to pinch hit because we need to score. And that's National League Baseball for 120 years. 1-0, bottom six, two on, two out, pitchers coming up. All right, do we try to get a run here? 2-1, one out. Do we try to get a run here? 2-1, one out. You're not asking the pitcher to go up there and bunt. Maybe in 1950, but not now. That rule is dumb. They are going to use the TrackMan strike zone again. Now, the TrackZone 3D strike zone was an enormous success in the Atlantic League in 2019. It was awesome. It was far more consistent. It was far more accurate. And it completely eliminated arguments. You know, where are you, that was really a strike? Computer said it was a strike. What are you going to argue? They're going to change it to where instead of having a 3D strike zone, now it's going to be a 2D strike zone. It will be a two-dimensional box in front of the plate instead of the three-dimensional strike zone that encompasses the entire plate. Why? What is the point? how is this supposed to be better? And not only that, listen to this horse hockey. They're going to deliberately set the strike zone to be wider, but not taller. So they're going to purposely set the strike zone to be lower based on a batter's height than it was in 2019. So instead of letter high, they're going to, which is supposed to be the top of the zone, they're going to push it down. And it's going to be wider, so it's going to, you know, pitches off the plate are going to be strikes. So if you are a taller batter, I guess the taller you are, the more room you don't have to worry about being a strike. Because, you know, let's say they move it from the letters to the belly button, right? Well, there's more space there on a guy 6'5 than there is on a guy 5'6. This is idiotic. They claim that this is to encourage more contact. The thought process is that pitches at the top of the strike zone lead to less contact than pitches on the inner and outer edge of the plate. So because the guy can't hit it, we've got to remove it from the game? I don't know. I see Jose Altuve hit lots of letter-high pitches pretty well. And he's 5'6". This is a dumb change. The worst one... Oh, we'll save the worst one for next. Life would be worthless. Everything's gone in
life. Nothing is left. ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you, 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. On the HRMP listen line, on the text line, on Twitter at PCreighton1. At Aaron is blitzed on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975. So here is the humdinger of a dumbass rule change Major League Baseball is going to try to put into the Atlantic League this year. They want to move the mound back. Not up or down. They want to move it back by 1 foot. To 61 feet, 6 inches. They're going to do this for the, I believe, for the second half of the season so that they can use the first half of the season as the control group, because it's not like they don't have, I don't know, 130 years of history on, you know, pitching from 60 feet, 6 inches. But they'll use the first half of the season at 60 and the second half of the season at 61-6. Because apparently they really just want to see pitchers' arms fall off. Now, in 2019, they were going to try moving the mound back 2 feet. But pitchers in the Atlantic League basically lost their minds over injury concerns, so they didn't do it. But this year, they're going to do it by moving it back 1 foot. Now, the math behind it is that the extra foot slows down a pitch by 1.5 miles per hour. You know, it also gives you an extra, 0.2 of a second to react. But the point being, you throw from 60 feet 6 inches from the time you're 13 on. Once you, you know, come out of Little League and you're 13 years old, then you go into, you know, FABL or Connie Mack, junior high teams, or whatever leagues you played in, Babe Ruth leagues, At that point, at 13, you go to the big mound, 60 foot, 6 inches. All your mechanics, your release point, your stretch, your drive, your arm angle, everything from that point forward is based on being able to throw a strike from the distance of 60 feet, 6 inches. If you try to do that with the extra foot, they're not going to be strikes. You know, that curveball you throw that breaks through the zone is now going to break square into the dirt. You know, the pitch that you throw on the outside part of the plate is now going to drift off the plate. The cutter that you bounce right behind the plate is now going to bounce on the plate. Splitters, sinkers, same thing. Hard slider, same thing. That means pitchers have to change their mechanics and their release points. For those of you wondering what the effects are of messing with your mechanics and your release points, Exhibit A, Forrest Whitley, whose mechanics and release points change every single year. And that's not changing the distance from where he throws. When you're constantly messing with the pitcher's mechanics and release point, you're almost guaranteeing you're going to injure their arm. And again, if you want faster pace of play, making it easier for the hitters to stand up there and swing from their heels is not making the game shorter. You want more contact in the game? Then talk to your teams about not being 100% analytics and actually returning to traditional baseball. You know, choke up on the bat with two strikes instead of swinging from the heels as hard as you freaking can. Learning how to bunt so that not only guys who get down the line in 3.3 seconds know how to bunt. You want more action? I can't remember the last time I saw a team hit and run. That is like gone. Gone with the stolen base. Why? Analytics. Now, there is a very big place in baseball for analytics, but it can't be the one and only thing that you ever rely on. The reason why there's more strikeouts than hits is because guys aren't trying to hit for contact. They're trying to hit 400-foot homers every time they swing. That's why we see some hideous swords when guys get fooled on breaking stuff, because they're loading up trying to uncork this massive swing and then they realize, oh, turds! And then they look stupid with the sword. And that's why Rob Friedman with Pitching Ninja has such a great account to follow, because there's tons of swords. Do pitchers throw harder now? Yes. Do they have bigger breaking stuff? Yes. Are batters bigger and stronger and faster and generate more torque and more bat speed than ever before? Yes. For all the advantages the pitchers have picked up over 40 years, so have the hitters. The difference is teams aren't teaching hitters how to hit contact. They don't teach guys how to go the other way. Every time you see a guy wind up with the shift and they're jamming him inside, if you knew how to bunt, that's the easiest hit you'll ever get. I saw Mark Teixeira bunt for a double against the shift. And we're not talking about a guy who was real fast. Bunted for a double. All of these asinine rule changes are just going to get guys hurt. They're going to detract from the game. And they're going to bastardize it. Here's an easy rule to put in. Universal DH. Not hard. Here's another easy rule to put in. Make the bags bigger. instead of, what, 15-inch bags? Make them 18-inch bags. At least make the bag at first base 18 inches. You don't need two bags, but make the bag at first base bigger. Just, you know, 2 inches bigger or so, which eliminates guys getting spiked at first base, eliminates some collisions, just creates a little bit more room there for guys not to slam into each other because first basemen don't weigh 170 pounds anymore. Now they're like 230. That guy coming down the line, he's running a lot faster, and he's a lot bigger, too. Don't necessarily need the bigger bag at second or third. At first, you could have a little bit bigger bag. Don't need to move the mound back. Need to actually coach your players. Need to teach guys how to play small ball. Because that has just gone the way of the dodo. Nothing exemplifies that more than the extra inning rule where you start with a runner on second base. That's a guaranteed run every time if your team has any clue how to play small ball. Runner at second. First batter bunts him to third. Next batter, ground ball is a run. That's it. All you need to do is score that guy. How many times, especially last year, how many times did we see the Astros play 12 innings, 13 innings, 14 innings? Did we have to see Cy Snead come into the game and blow it because the Astros couldn't just lay down a bunt, hit a ground ball, get the hell out of Dodge? Now, the Astros are not the only team guilty of this. Damn near every team is guilty of this. But the first one that remembers how to play small ball has a massive advantage over everybody else because they're not screwing around. They always score the run. Rule changes. You can't legislate stupid. You can't make them smarter with rules either. You've got to teach them fundamental baseball. Plate hits.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.